with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, or wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you remember and reclaim that which you have always been and are as that eternal soul. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And for people on the West Coast, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Just getting ready to go into your evening. So hello to everybody out there. And if you've been following me for some time, you know that each and every one of these broadcasts are dedicated to this integration of spirituality and our mental health. And it's all placed within the context of our relationships. I mean, we're not people that are just an island unto ourselves. We are social beings, and therefore we are in relationships, you know, relationship with ourselves, relationship with others, whether it be personal or professional relationships, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. That is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Or I have a second website here that you can also leave me your comments and check out some things on there. It's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. Now, if you would like to be part of this show, you know, I just invite you to call in with any insights or questions or general conversation on tonight's topic. I just invite you to call that toll-free number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as always, I'll be taking your calls after the break, about halfway through the show. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, this broadcast will be posted again on the BBS Radio website. So then you can go back and listen to it again, or even if you want to go back into the archives and listen to other shows that you may have missed. And just a little reminder that these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music. As well as this show always replays on WNEW 102.7 FM out of New York on the weekends. Well, you know, when I started this series, and I've been sharing this lately, at least for the past couple of months, that when I started this, and by the way, just for those of you who are keeping score, I am in my sixth year of this broadcast and loving every broadcast, loving every minute of it. But when I first was kicking around the idea to start this series, you know, there's a reason why I chose, you know, Reclaiming Authenticity, because I wanted to emphasize this integration of spirituality and our mental health. Because one thing is for certain, and I've seen this for most of my life, you know, I've not only seen through these broadcasts, but also through my clinical practice, is that there is a growing awareness and definitely a hunger for the need for people to not only integrate their own mental health issues with their spirituality, but also people want to apply their spiritual growth within the context of relationships, especially healing from the intergenerational traumatic experiences or those intergenerational wounds. And the benefit of healing from traumatic experiences is that we often dispel the mental and the emotional distortions of who we think we are, and we come a little bit closer to discovering the fullness of who we truly are as souls. Now, the father of holistic medicine, as it were, coined to this person, Edgar Cayce, he was also considered the most documented psychic of the 20th century. He once wrote that what is truly valuable in thought, what is truly valuable in activity and in experience, is the sense of appreciation and this inner realization and the understanding of the self, namely the self in relation to others and oneself in relation to God. And meditation is a means to this end. So that was Edgar Cayce. He recognized this. And somebody who I had mentioned on this show many times, Dr. Harold Koenig, whom I met years and years ago, who was the director of the Center for Spirituality and Theology and Health, also notes that a person's religious and spiritual beliefs and practices are indeed important resources for coping with illness. He was a medical doctor and just he had this love of, just is there a correlation? Is there an integration that can be had? And do a person's religion or spiritual beliefs and just observances, do they impact us, especially when we cope with a physical illness or a mental health illness? And there is such a wonderful connection between your beliefs and your sense of well-being, such as do your religious or spiritual beliefs create a sense of positive beliefs in you that enhance your well-being? Does this integration provide you a sense of comfort when sorrow is right at your doorstep? And does this integration provide you an inner strength that's gained from your religion or your spirituality? And deeper meditation and contemplation and contemplative prayer, let's just say, to name a few. And Dr. Koenig's research highlighted the belief that improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness, but it may help your overall well-being. Such as, you get a higher sense of purpose. You feel that you have a greater sense of peace and hope and meaning. Or you may experience having better confidence or improved self-esteem and more self-control. So there are many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spiritual health. And this is where I come in, because I have a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find the courage to be able to reclaim what has always been in them, let alone remembering who you have always been and are as a soul. Go back to the original, like, what have you brought into this world? And who are you if we just take away everything and at us just being a soul, not just being a soul, but that's powerful enough. But you get the idea. We are eternal. And as I'll be sharing in this program tonight, our souls are filled with light. And as the show is going to be focusing on is how then can we be the light? And just the limitations of living in the shadows, and just how powerful is our lighted soul when it comes to looking at the shadow side of what we think and who we think we are. Because I do have this really powerful belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need for in this life in terms of our giftedness, or our skills and our talents, our strengths and character traits and so forth, and how we live our giftedness is in and through various relationships. Because this one aspect, just this aspect alone, is very important when considering who we are as a soul, because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express them identically. In other words, each of us has this a thisness about us, a chaitas, things about us that is very unique, things that cannot be duplicated, and we can try and imitate We grew up with heroes or whatever, and like I want that character trait, or I have similar gifts, but nobody really has the ability to be able to duplicate us. Because again, we are just so vast as a lighted soul. But how do we live that out on this earth and in relationships? Depends on how we use our giftedness and skills and talents and strengths and character traits and so forth. And this is something that the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hacietas. My one and only Latin word that I know. I love that word. It just rolls right off the tongue. Hacietas. It's a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. Or as I explain it to the kids, it's your thumbprint. And therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are. So later on in the broadcast, like I said, I'll be taking your calls because I really want to hear from you on tonight's subject. How do we be the light and just the limitations of living in the shadows? Well, before we get started, I just want to give a quick shout out, wishing everybody an early happy Thanksgiving. I mean, can you believe it? Here we are, as of tomorrow, we are 1 week away. And hopefully, this year's Thanksgiving will be filled with pleasant memories and lots of leftovers. It seems like this year, more and more people I talk to about, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? A handful or so people would say, well, we're not going to spend time in the kitchen this year. We're just going to go out to a restaurant. And of course, right away, I want to say, but you're missing out on all the leftovers, that cold turkey sandwich afterwards, or, cold stuffing or whatever, reheated mashed potatoes. You're missing out on that. But to each their own. Some people just are, they don't want to be bothered with the fuss of trying to pull together such a big meal. But they can still enjoy, a Thanksgiving dinner and even invite some of their family or friends to come along at the restaurant as well. Well, let's see. On that note, let's start off with a question tonight. How many of you out there are familiar with the song The Dark Side of the Moon? Now, apart from being one of the coolest albums ever produced and sung by Pink Floyd, The Dark Side of the Moon is actually a reference to The Far Side of the Moon, not to be confused with the Far Side comics. But anyway, The Dark Side of the Moon is a reference to the far side of the moon, which always faces away from Earth. Now, according to astronomers, both sides of the moon have about 2 weeks of sunlight followed by 2 weeks of darkness, which the phrase dark side of the moon comes from. Now, don't send me emails on this, but before you accuse me of ripping off Pink Floyd, today I wanted to explore how we can actually make friends with our shadow side. That side of our personality that contains all the parts of ourselves that we really don't want to admit to having. In fact, the shadow, as Carl Jung pointed out, often shows up on an unconscious level and then moves into our conscious level. And the more we make friends with our shadow side, as even looking at it as our teacher, let's just say, the more opportunity we have to understand those parts and heal from those parts and integrate them into our lives. And when we do that, something very fascinating happens. So we'll get to this, okay? So, as a kid, and I'm sure many of us have been there, but as kids, let's say we were always fascinated with how our bodies produce the shadow when we face the sun. Or perhaps we even had fun making puppet shades with our hands and standing in front of like a movie projector or when light was just shining on a wall. I mean, either way, we didn't pay attention to our shadows when it came to things that we didn't like about ourselves. We just thought it was cool. Well, another childhood aspect regarding darkness and shadows is that if any of us were ever afraid of the dark, did we ever properly learn how to face it or overcome it? I mean, I was always told as a young boy that there's nothing to be afraid of when it came to the dark because there was nothing in the dark that could not be found in the light. That's a very good point. Still, many people fear shadows and darkness. And as I briefly mentioned, it was actually the work of the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung that brought the concept of the shadow, metaphorically speaking, of course, into our awareness of understanding of who we are. And he put it in the context of mental health or working through the things that deeply distress us. And this aspect of ourselves, of who we are, has long been recognized as a universal feature of a person, that is, the shadow. Now, according to Jung, the shadow is the source of both our inner creative and destructive energies. So it can be a very effective teacher if we're willing to sit with it, not be intimidated by it, but listen to what the shadow, our shadow, is telling us about us. Now, elsewhere in his writings, and Carl Jung, he just wrote a lot, but deep within his writings, he wrote on the shadow. Unfortunately, there can be no doubt that humanity is, on the whole, less good than he imagines himself or wants to be, because everybody carries a shadow. And the less it is embodied in the individual's consciousness life, the blacker and denser it is. At all accounts, it forms this unconscious snag thwarting our most well-meant intentions. So, in other words, just to break it down a little bit further, what Carl Jung is saying here is that within each of us lies two parts of a whole: the person we want to be, and some part of us that conflicts with the ideal version of ourselves. And often the part that conflicts with the ideal is the part that has impulsive urges, desires, and things that we feel, but we don't like. Well, I want to add another aspect to that, as we are souls first and foremost. And yeah, there's going to be things about our, embodied soul, let's just say, that we don't like, things that we wish we could do better. Things that we know that are there, but do we actually have the strength to be able to do something about it so that more of our lighted soul shines in a darkened world? I think we can. In fact, I know we can, because being a soul that is just filled with light, that is who we are. But what keeps that light from shining? This contrast between the ego and the shadow, does have this tendency, first and foremost, that cause us to reject and resist the shadow, just as we project parts of ourselves that we dislike, we unconsciously project them onto others. And we can just say, well, that's not my fault, it's their fault. Or if they hadn't done this, then I wouldn't have done this. It's like we just don't want to take responsibility. And that's the shadow side. That's the part of us that we know it's there, but we don't want to talk about it. We don't even want to see it. And now, another example of this, the way the shadow comes out, is that it can also be easily seen in our dislike for certain people. And often the specifics that we dislike in others are a clear indication of what we dislike in ourselves. So again, it's a clear projection. It's like something I can't stand in myself, I'm going to project onto somebody else so I feel better about myself. Well, if that's still not clear, let's also think of it in terms of Robert Louis Stevenson's story of the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Hopefully you read the story, or you've probably seen movies, but if you haven't, it goes like this. In his story, Dr. Jekyll represents the respectable part of one's personality. But when he transforms into Mr. Hyde, his shadowy personality gains dominance over him and wreaks havoc in his life and the lives of others. Now, in this context, the shadow is a psychological term for everything that we can't see in ourselves. Like I said, we know it's there, we just don't want to look at it. We don't even want to talk about it. We don't even want to hear from it. But, you know, does the shadow side of us pop up as fast as that change from, you know, Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde? It can. Just think about your buttons that get pushed day in and day out, or who is pushing those buttons, and so forth. The shadow side can come up real fast, you know, even before we know what's going on, like there it is, you know, and the ego is right there as well. Now, I know that most of us go to great lengths to protect our self-image from anything unflattering or unfamiliar. In fact, many people I counsel often struggle with the concept that they have the capacity for good. I mean, you know, how can I have the capacity to love another deeply, yet at the same time, how can I also hurt them deeply? How can good and evil live in me? Well, I have a friend, known him for many, many years. He excels in both the martial arts and he excels as an acupuncturist. And one day I just asked him, I go, you know, which discipline did you learn first? Now, my friend said he was first taught acupuncture, then he learned martial arts. And this all came from his teacher, who told him that it's easy to hurt another person, but to learn how to heal another takes greater discipline. I mean, his teacher was certainly wise because he understood that the capacity to hurt and to heal is inside everyone. And so my friend was taught both. Interesting. Well, every now and then, I run into this misperception, you know, that's out there today, that before you can help others, you have to be free from your own pain and suffering, you know, to be healed from your own problems, or at least have your act together, okay? And quite often, many people, you know, quote Jesus's teaching on taking the plank out of your own eye first before removing the speck of sawdust from another. You know, Matthew's gospel, by the way. And, you know, when taken out of context, many people wrongly interpret this teaching to mean that others simply have no right to say anything to somebody else about their problems, or that people should just mind their own business. But again, this is not the case. In fact, it often turns out to be just the opposite. So that in spite of themselves, people find ways to reach out to serve others, to offer emotional healing and support. That's the proper context. You know, for example, consider the number of people in your life who have helped you along the way, or spoken words of comfort and grace and healed you on some level with their kindness. Now, when you think about these people, did they seem to have their acts together? Or did they just do despite their perceived limitations? I mean, did they wait until they had everything together in their lives before reaching out? Or did it appear that they just reached out and they comforted and they gifted others because they knew they could? Well, I'm certainly we can make a long list of people who fit that description. And that's just people whom we are aware of. What about the people who work behind the scenes? You know, the people that we pass every day, but we don't see. You know, those people that we don't interact with. Or as I've heard it once said, you know, the invisible people in our lives. Who are they? Where are they? They're there. But why is it that we don't see them? Well, let's just take this idea one step further. When we're making this list, a long list of people who fit the description of just in spite of themselves, they're going to do because it's the right thing to do, would we be willing to add our names to that list? Right? Do we believe that before we can comfort and reach out to others, that we must first make sure that our front porch is swept clean, so to speak? You know, not necessarily. And ironically, it's this exact idea that's echoed in Henri Nouwen's book, The Wounded Healer. It's a classic book that just raises this one question. Do we have to wait until we are fully healed from our past, our wounds, and our shortcomings before we reach out to others? Well, if the answer is no, then what are we waiting for? Well, I mean, we all have psychological, emotional, physical, even spiritual wounds and scars. And these wounds and scars refer to what we have gone through. You know, those reminders of where we have been, not to serve as excuses that we can make to justify our anger or our bitterness or prejudices, but rather our woundedness can often serve to awaken compassion and empathy in us towards others. You know, most of the time society tells us to look at ourselves in terms of a dualistic sense of good or evil, whether we are this or we're that. In fact, we may even learn to use both good and evil and to our advantage at times. You know, and this is what I mean. I'm sure you've seen this t-shirt. Usually comes out in the summer, but hey, you know, I'm sure you've seen this t-shirt that reads, and I'll clean it up a little bit, 50% angel, 50% devil, or some alternative. You know, you get the meaning, okay? And I often wondered, why would anybody want to make that statement, let alone wear a t-shirt like that? Unless, of course, you're proud of the fact that you can keep others off balance or at least keep them at a distance. So, in other words, be nice to me and I'll be nice to you. But if you're not nice to me, you're going to get the horns and I'll make you pay. And yet, here's another level of irony. You wouldn't believe the number of times I've heard the same people who would make a statement like that, I'm 50% angel, 50% devil. The same people complain about how lonely and miserable they are. I mean, we can't expect to have it both ways. We can't. Because, in all fairness, keeping people at bay, in this sense, comes from a place that has been wounded and yet to be healed. And granted, people who have been previously hurt in relationships are leery of being hurt again. That I understand. I get that. However, others may shy away from this person because they don't want to risk saying or doing something that, oh, I don't want to get the horns here. So there is a potential of both not being able to be in a healthy, satisfying relationship. Now, just consider for a moment, let's just put this in a real context here. Let's just consider the upcoming Thanksgiving Day observance. I mean, picture it. You're at the table, you know, let's say you're hosting. Let's go with a family that's hosting Thanksgiving. And other family members are coming in and friends, and you can't wait because, hey, the TV's working and you're going to watch football the rest of the day. I mean, it's a great lineup this year. But there you are at the table, and the table is all dressed with good food, just mouth-watering food, a nice little centerpiece, candles, and everything shiny and, you know, just Hallmark would be proud, okay? You may even say a little blessing. Then everybody digs in, and everything is going fine. Until somebody says to another person at the table, isn't that your third biscuit? I thought you said you're on a diet this year and you wanted to lose 20 pounds. Boom. There go the fireworks. And of course, these family scenes are very familiar as Thanksgiving, as well as Thanksgiving Eve, are still the number one reason for domestic calls to the police. And that they probably outranks all other celebrations or holidays combined, but it's just something about Thanksgiving. You know, the police are very, very busy. So again, you know, just what is it that we're doing? You know, How many more Thanksgivings or Christmases or Hanukkahs or Kwanzas or, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, whatever the celebration is, how many more times do we want them to be ruined by previous hurts that have never been forgiven or never let go of or always hanging on? Or just when you feel the need to say something, that's maybe a good time just to not say it at all. Well, despite our perceived differences, whether we're looking at race or language, religion or culture, there's this common Native American expression that emphasizes the interconnectedness among all that we see, namely, "Metaquis Oisin," all are related. And this phrase is understood by the Lakota Sioux people as an expression extending to all creation. Everything, that is humanity, animals, vegetation, minerals, elements, land, water, thunder, fire, wind, sun, moon, stars, so on and so forth, it's all connected to one another and is affected by one another. And we are all connected to one another because we're all souls. Well, I really would love to hear what's on your heart on this subject tonight. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about how we can make friends with our shadow side, that side of our personality that contains all the parts of ourselves that we really don't want to admit to having. But the shadow side, as it were, can really act like a wonderful teacher because it shows us where we still need to work on ourselves. Okay, and unfortunately, this flies in the face of society because for too long, humanity has been influenced by the, well, what's in it for me scenario. And as much as we can become enthralled by our gifts and our giftedness, we must remember that our talents and skills and blessings and knowledge and wisdom, everything that we've come into the world with, are not for ourselves. These gifts are for the benefit of somebody else. And reclaiming our authenticity as to who we truly are and what we brought into this world compels us to now ask, how can I use what I have been given to serve humanity? How can I alleviate suffering? How can I speak up for those who do not have a voice? And so on and so forth. I mean, when was the last time you asked some of these really tough questions of yourself? I think at times we make it more difficult than what it needs to be, almost as if we have to talk ourselves into it. And, while we're doing that, we're trying to talk ourselves out of it. But when we take a serious, let's just call it a personal inventory, a moral inventory, we realize that, hey, We have everything we need. We have everything we need. And other people are out there are just waiting for us to use our gifts and giftedness and skills and so forth, and just being authentic. But again, there's some people out there that might be content to be who they are. Okay. But we need to ask ourselves, am I being authentic today? Am I being honest and genuine in my relationships? I hear from far too many people who are waiting until they're retired, whatever that will be, to do what they've always dreamed of doing. I mean, waiting for what? Having all our bills paid, having enough money in the bank. I mean, too many people play the, well, I'll get around to it someday game, while the vulnerable and wounded people are in need now. Such hurting people need others to see in them the potential to live authentically, including the benefit of reclaiming who they truly are. But how many people stop at the externals and just find it very difficult to see that lighted soul of who another person is? I mean, perhaps people believe they have too much to lose to be authentic. Perhaps they do not know or fear that people will not accept them as they are. Perhaps they have a fear of rejection or ridicule or shame or ostracism or being shunned. The Native Americans have just these great sayings, just a great way of looking at life. And just want to share with you this saying that's been passed down from ancient times, that the strength of a tree comes not from growing thicker in good years when there is water, but from staying alive in the bad and dry times. And I don't have to point this out to you people. We live in a time, we live in times when, as we focus on the virtue of stewardship, the one gift we need to foster and treasure is the gift of ourselves and our inner life and our spirit of resiliency, so we can be better prepared to not wait till people approach us, but to go to where people are hurting. And that could just be as simply as next door. Neighbor, or somebody we run into in a grocery store, or maybe sitting on the bleachers at your kids' or grandkids' basketball games or soccer games or football games, whatever it might be. We never know, but to always be open and willing. And in those instances, I don't think, it's coincidental, but I think there's just a direct interaction of two people coming together who are meant to have their paths cross that day. Because in that interaction, something beautiful has the potential to happen. Okay. See, there is great value in reclaiming our authenticity because we find an inner freedom. And we find that strength, we find that peace, and we find that assurance of who we are without giving away our uniqueness or playing by somebody else's rules or definitions or expectations. We come to terms with who we are individually as well as our connectedness. And for some, finding their inner strength to stand on their own two feet just further empowers them to reach out for better relationships, or let's say a better job, or maybe even to pursue justice. Because indeed, those who are authentic find God's blessings. And I believe this is where the next great spiritual awakening is coming from, finding the strength to reclaim our authenticity. And for us to embrace the fact that we have come into this world with everything that we already need, to remember our hachiatas, our uniqueness, is who we are on the inside. And we live in a time when this is truer than ever before, if that's proper English. Indeed, the choice is ours. What are we going to feed? If we feed inauthenticity and our shadow side, then we're simply going to get more of the same. But if we heal and integrate this shadow and overcome it, we will behave more genuinely and responsibly in our relationships. And that's where great transformation occurs. Because once we understand this teaching, you know, the blame game starts and stops with us. I mean, are we going to be content to just simply throw up our hands and fatalistically say, well, that's just the way the world is. Nothing I can do about it, nothing we can do about it. Or do we realize that one simple act of kindness and love and authenticity sends out ripples of transformation that will wash back ashore to us? We've been given tremendous power for transformation. Too much power at times, because without authenticity of the self, that power is going to wound and damage others, which is very, very dangerous, as history has demonstrated. And we don't have to go back too far in history. But yet, on the other hand, with authenticity comes a correct use of power, because it's been tempered with wisdom, humility, and grace for the betterment of all. It empowers others to live authentically. It doesn't tear it down. It doesn't tear down relationships. It doesn't create jealousy. But rather, it's, I want you to know the freedom too. I want you to come into your authentic self. Because as one person is lifted, we all are lifted, and so forth. As one person is healed, we all are healed. So what we do, just one to one, soul to soul, life to life, has that capacity to be able to heal humanity or hurt humanity. Now, reclaiming our authenticity means that we now have the capacity to change, to transform. You know, the power to be that which has yet to be realized. That when we experience this psycho-spiritual transformation, as it were, we do catch a glimpse of the beginning of something greater than ourselves, with the unlimited potential for life. Well, as a counseling educator and a clinician, I'm often saddened by people's beliefs that when it comes to addressing their physical and emotional, even spiritual problems, they often consider themselves powerless and without a voice. Perhaps this is a result of never feeling valued or being allowed to use their voice. I mean, how can I use my voice if I've never been able to find it? I've never been able to, you know, give them permission to use it, and so forth. Okay. Now, admittedly, many people are unable to perceive their insights and strengths, as if they cannot see themselves capable of healing, let alone achieving anything meaningful in their lives. You know, and most of the times, you know, people are content to live for brief moments of joy and celebration, you know, like Thanksgiving. Okay, we get together, we have some good food, we watch some football, and we might take the next day off, or we have to go back to work, you know. But, you know, we live for brief moments of joy and celebration. You know, we have these transitional milestones of, like, say, you know, key events in our lives, such as, like, baptism of family members or marriages and birthdays, graduations, promotions, retirements, things like that. And furthermore, when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed, not only by the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also by the belief that inner freedom and peace and joy and unconditional love that everybody's been talking about, well, those things just might be too good to be true. You know, that those things belong to somebody else. But that's not true. So, how do we transform this shadow side of ourselves? Well, it's easier than more difficult times we make it out to be. We transform it by knowing ourselves as light. Now, I'll be upfront. You know, not everybody agrees with this understanding that when you come right down to it, we are souls full of light. I mean, but Remember the word namaste? You know, quite literally, it means that because I see myself as a lighted soul, I am able to recognize another person as a lighted soul, even if that person cannot see themselves in that manner. Light is that powerful because no amount of darkness can overcome a light that is shining. Well, okay, but what about all the darkness and violence in the world today? How do we overcome that? Well, tell you what, let's reframe that question by first asking, how do we increase the light in order to create a, let's say, a kinder, gentler world? Well, let's just start there, okay? Because by all means, it does begin with us, but not in the sense of asking for more light. I mean, we don't need more things. Instead, we ask to have the courage and the strength to remove things in our lives that hinder our light from shining. And I have to tell you, folks, I mean, just when I made that switch in my own prayer life, that made all the difference in the world. Because as a kid, I was just raised like, okay, God, I know you're there and everything. Thank you, but I need this, 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 and this. And if you're not too busy, I'd like to have that and that too. Thank you and good night. That's how I was raised. Okay. But I realized as I got older, it's like relationship with God is not transactional. It's not like, okay, I need this, 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 and this. But what if we realize that we have all those things, but how do we bring them out in our lighted soul? How do we let that light shine, so to speak? How do we increase the light in order to create the world in which we want to live? Okay. You know, I believe we first have to ask for the courage and the strength to remove things in our lives that hinder our light from shining. You know, things like bitterness and jealousy, destructive thoughts, you know, unforgiveness, rage, envy, strife, lust, and every kind of ego-driven selfishness and destructiveness that tear lives apart. We don't need to ask for more things. What we do need to ask for things to be removed, things that are very destructive, so that our light can shine forth. Okay? And in fact, I just wanted to share with you tonight a book that I came across decades and decades ago. And yes, the book is that old. Okay. It is the book entitled The Four Things That Matter the Most. The Four Things That Matter the Most. And the subheading is it's a book about living. And it's written by Ira Byock, Byock, Ira Byock. And he was a 40 plus year oncology, you know, hospice physician. And so when I first started out in this field, you know, I kind of cut my teeth on loss and grief and death and dying and so forth. And so I became quite familiar with his work early on. And if there's ever a person I wanted to meet, you know, people that you can count on one finger, or I'm sorry, one hand. Sorry, we can count on one hand that, you know, wouldn't it be cool to go back in time and to meet that person? Well, Ira Byock would definitely be one of those people. Because again, back in the days of Borders bookstores, you know, I found this book just one day, you know, just going in there and said, well, let's see what's going on in the world of, you know, self-help books. Who's writing what? You know, and I came across this title and I recognized Ira Byock's name. And so I grabbed it and I made myself, you know, comfortable in this little chair. And I'm just having me a good old time, just a party, you know, no problem. Sitting there enjoying it. And before I knew what I was reading, I read up like half of the book. And so much so, I don't know how long I was sitting there, but, you know, the clerks that come around and they're just kind of looking at me like, okay, bud, are you going to buy that book or are you just going to sit there all day? What are you going to do? So I was like, I got the hint. I got it. I got it. And I went and I paid for the book. And then I went over to the little cafe area there and had a cup of coffee and just continued reading. And it was very transformative because it all boils down to this. It begins by acknowledging the four things that matter the most. You know, such as, okay, you have a loved one who is facing their mortality and you have everything that you want to say to that person, but because there's so much, where do you begin? And this is where the book picks up. He says, if you only have four things to say, these are the four things that matter the most. Forgive me for, you know, you fill in the context. And then I forgive you for, fill in the context. Thank you for, and then I love you because, and again, you fill in the context. And that's it. Forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. And I love you. That's it. I have never found any other things that we can add to that list, because these are the four things that matter the most. Forgiveness, gratitude, and love. These three areas, these three aspects, restore, repair, heal relationships. And it takes a lot of humility to be able to come to terms with, yeah, okay, I need to be saying these things to people who are living, maybe even to people who are coming over for Thanksgiving. Forgive me for, I forgive you for, thank you for, and I love you because. Because even when an opportunity to forgive and reconcile with somebody who has caused us great pain and suffering, or even vice versa, maybe we've caused them great pain and suffering, we cannot allow bitterness to so entangle our soul that it's often impossible to let go of the pain. And that's what keeps our light from shining. Bitterness, anger, resentment. I'm not going to apologize. It wasn't even my fault. Well, that sounds like that's already gone down the road of bitterness. Well, you know, if that person didn't start it, I mean, are we that driven by our ego to not being able to forgive somebody? Or to even, how do we shift all that into living in gratitude, walking in gratitude? You know, but to be able to see ourselves and one another as lighted souls means that we have to work through unforgiveness, bitterness, lack of gratitude, and we also have to work through hate. All those things destroy. But forgiveness, gratitude, and love restore, heal, and allows that light of who we are to come out in any situation, because it's not driven by our ego, but rather it is driven by the fact that we know who we are, and we know the power of that lighted soul and the weakness of, let's say, the darkness or the shadow side to be able to overshadow it. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. So glad you were able to spend this time with me here tonight. Do please have a very pleasant rest of the week and a happy Thanksgiving next week. Everybody, please be safe out there if you're traveling. And remember, some of the best ways of healing relationships are as close as saying the four things that matter the most. Everybody take care and good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.